something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant.
I didn't know we were podcasting about dolphins.
That was my bat.
Oh, I thought it was a dolphin.
No.
No?
That was a bat.
Well, then why are you wearing your dolphin running shorts?
That has nothing to do with bats and everything to do with Dan Marino.
They probably still have those.
Dolphin running shorts? What are you talking about?
Yeah, remember the little, like, real runners, they still wear those shorts. Or maybe it's all spandex now, like super tight.
Okay.
But they used to be just like a little wispy piece of...
But they were called dolphin shorts?
Well, I think that was the brand.
No, I wasn't familiar with
those. That's what I remember. But, you know, things were... the right gust of wind could reveal lots of things.
I know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Like short shorts.
Yeah,
like
runner
real
shorts.
Real flimsy ones.
Real satiny, flimsy, wispy. I think they were dolphin running shorts. And by the way, this podcast is not sponsored by Dolphin Running Shorts.
No. It's sponsored by the Bats of America.
That's right. Which I always have liked bats, but after reading this, I'm so much more in love with bats.
Oh, yeah, they're neat animals.
It's amazing. And not just like, I learned a lot of stuff. I kind of knew about the echolocation and stuff like that. Yeah.
Actually, here's my impression of a bat echolocating. Pretty good, huh?
Because humans can't hear it.
That's right. Yep. I just did it really great.
Very nice.
Chuck, if you are on the fence, well, not you because you've just stated that you're over the fence, clearly in the bat yard.
Pro-bat.
Pro-bats.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah.
They never did anything to anybody on purpose, aside from some of them sucking your blood while you sleep. Aside from that.
Super rare.
Bats seem to be pretty great animals. And if you're on the fence about bats... Mm-hmm. And you want to go over to the pro bat side, go onto YouTube and type in bat eating a banana.
It's very cute.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
There's also baby bat burrito videos.
Yeah.
They're wrapped up in a blanket, not a tortilla.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cute bat videos out there because there's a lot of cute bats.
There sure are, my friend.
And you might say, no. I've seen bats. They are as ugly as pure evil gets.
Yeah.
You're talking about what are called microbats, the ones with the crazy nostrils that actually make Yumi gag.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I think they're cute, too. I mean, I get it, because they definitely look like literary ghouls and fiends.
Mm-hmm.
But
which makes you wonder. I wonder if fiends and ghouls were modeled after those types of bats.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was so obvious.
Well, no. I mean, it would have to, because that's a real thing, and... They look so much alike. Well,
maybe no one had seen a bat.
Well, yeah.
And then they make gargoyles and they're like, what a coincidence.
Or maybe a bat just died at the feet of an artist one day and he's like, oh man, I got to cast this in clay.
Right.
And put it on my front doorstep.
I know what you were driving at, though. They are cute in their own really weird, uncanny way.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but.
But nothing like the flying fox. Those are legit cute.
No, and actually, this article needs to be updated, man. So bats are bats are the only flying mammals, we should say. They're very unique animals.
Mm-hmm.
Only flying mammals.
Wait, what about the penguin?
Non-flying. And a bird.
Oh, okay.
Didn't even come close.
Gotcha.
Bats are mammals.
Yeah.
And they're more closely related to humans than, say, like the fox or the rat or whatever that they're frequently described as being the flying version of.
Sure.
And there's, I think, something like 1,200 species of bats.
That's a lot of bat species.
And they all belong to the order Chiroptera, which means hand wing, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And then bats typically are subdivided into two suborders. And it used to be Mega Chiroptera and Micro Chiroptera.
Is that not right anymore?
No, because science, specifically like taxonomy, used to be kind of dumb.
Sure.
It was just based on appearance.
Yeah.
And then once the field of genetics came along, they started like genetically testing things and realizing that that's not a really good way to categorize things.
Like this skunk looks like a raccoon, but they're not the same thing.
Right. So maybe they shouldn't be in the same order any longer.
Yeah.
This is the case with bats. So it used to be based on their size. Mega bats and micro bats, or mega chiroptera and micro chiroptera. Now, because of genetic testing, some of the very small bats are now in the mega bat order, suborder, and vice versa.
But those are still suborders.
They are, but they renamed them to mega bats and micro bats.
Oh, I gotcha.
But so, for example, the long-tongued fruit bat is considered a mega bat, but its wingspan is only about 10 inches.
Right.
It's a little thing.
Whereas if you look at the flying fox or the fruit bat, Asia, Africa, and Australia, those things are adorable, and they are huge.
Yeah.
Like 6-foot wingspans on some of these bad boys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think they're gorgeous. I think it's the wing just terrifies people.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a cute little fuzzy fox, and then he goes,
right.
And unfolds those wings.
It envelops you and takes you to hell with it.
Well, that's what it evokes, I think, is a cape that something would wrap around you and suck your blood.
Yeah.
Like a vampire.
Oh, I wonder if vampires were invented independently of bats.
What is the cute little guy that
the bumblebee bat?
Yeah, I posted a picture of that fella on Facebook today. Just as a teaser, people didn't know that we're going to do an episode on it just to get reactions. And most people are like, "Oh, that's super cute," and a lot of people are like, "I still wouldn't touch that thing."
Well, that's a really good, sensible thing. Like bats might be cute and all that, but they're also enormous reservoirs for diseases. They're like top-notch disease reservoirs for diseases that you and I can catch, like Ebola and rabies.
Sure. And they think one of the reasons is because they, and we'll talk about this later, but they're so comfortable with each other, they just huddle together.
Right.
Spreading disease on one another.
Exactly. I mean, like, epidemic disease didn't take hold among humans until we moved into cities. And even in cities, like, we're still not elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
Figuratively we are, but not in reality. Bats are literally elbow to elbow in their colonies.
Yeah.
So disease just spreads anywhere it wants among them.
Yeah. However, about the rabies scare, they are carriers of rabies, but not like people think. Think less than 0.5% of bats are rabid. 0.5%. And you're way more likely to get rabies from raccoons and skunks and other
animals. Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Like that. Yeah.
That puts it in perspective. Because I like pet any raccoon I see. Maybe I should stop doing that.
You should probably stop doing that.
They bite me a lot.
Yeah. You should get checked out.
Maybe I should.
So yes, you said how many species? About 1,200. And aside from varying in size, like you said, the look of them, like the flying fox looks, like we said, like a little fox, has that long snout.
Right.
Looks traditionally like a mammal, has smaller ears, and those little scary looking guys have those huge ears and that nose that makes you gag.
So here's the thing, like, I believe that even that is up in the air now that they've started doing genetic testing.
What is?
Like, that classification based on looks as well.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's just bat taxonomy is really up for grabs right now. It's exciting time.
Let's say generally speaking, then. Probably.
Okay. One of the other distinctions, too, typically that divides these two suborders, Chuck, is what they eat.
Yeah.
Micro bats tend to be carnivorous.
Yes.
So it includes vampire bats, but vampire bats are not all bats are vampire bats, even if they're carnivorous.
No.
Most bats just eat insects if they're carnivorous.
Yeah, like mosquitoes.
But mega bats, including the big ones with the 6-foot wingspan.
Yeah.
The flying fox, I think you said. those are, they're just hippies. They just eat plants.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like literally nectar and spread pollen.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. Like birds. Why is that funny?
It's pretty great.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the wing, because this is where my learning really started here.
Yeah.
In researching this. The German word for bats is Fledermaus.
I expected more from you than that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I expected you to put on like a metal hat with like a spike coming out of the top.
That so, translates into flying mice.
Yes.
For the curious.
And people will say that because a bat does look kind of like a flying mouse or a flying rodent of some sort. But like I said, they're much more closely related to humans.
Yeah, and you also might think they're like birds because they fly around. Not so. When you look at the wing structure of a bat and a bird, very different. It actually, if you look at a human, if you held your arms out to your side with your elbows bent and your fingers spread, and then basically
shook your hand.
Yeah, like you were going to do jazz hands.
Right.
Exactly. And then imagine that there was a webbed membrane called a, how do you pronounce it? Patagium?
Patagium.
Patagium?
I don't know. One of those two.
Those are the wings.
Patagium.
The flesh. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The flesh of the wing. If you held your hands out and did jazz hands, but it was all webbed and connected, that is way more what a bat's wing looks like and functions like than a bird's wing.
Right. So a bird's wing has rigid bones in it, right?
Yes.
And the muscles that control the wings are located basically at what would amount to your armpits.
Yeah, like a socket.
So, like, just do the chicken dance real quick and think about what you're doing.
Yes.
Right? You're not, there's not really any movement in the actual arm. It's all at the shoulder joint.
Yeah.
Same with birds. With bats, that is not the case. Because they're basically like winged hands, which is the reason their order is named that, right?
Yes.
They can basically swim through the air.
Yeah.
Which allows them to dive bomb and turn and twist and go up and down and go after these insects that can fly really fast, which constitute most of their prey.
Oh, yeah.
Much more easily, and they're much more adept at maneuvering midair than your average bird is.
Yes, absolutely. Like 1,000 times. There's no science behind that.
I would say
statistic.
Even like 1,500 times.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if we're going without science, let's just say like 1,000,000 times more.
Yeah, a gazillion. They have little thumbs that extend out of the wing as a, in the form of a little small claw. Mm-hmm. And this is what they use to climb trees. It's really neat how they fly. I guess we'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. They don't have enough, lift with their wings to take off, like sitting on a branch like a bird.
Right.
They don't have, like, strong enough legs to run down a runway and take off. So they hang upside down and drop and then start flying.
Right. They have like small withered little legs that they basically drag behind them as they crawl.
Yeah. And so that's why they climb trees. They climb up to a high launch point.
Right.
And we'll get to the hanging later because that's super cool too. And then just fall and start flying.
Right. And that's what bats do.
That's what bats do.
And that's how bats fly.
Scientifically speaking, they believe that bats, used to not fly. And thanks to natural selection, the ones who could leap further and further from tree to tree, were more successful. And that eventually led to, patagium being formed.
Yeah.
And
they,
before you know it, they could fly.
Kind of like, lemurs or flying squirrels or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So like one of them was born with an extra skin flap and everyone's like, you freak. And then it flew.
Yeah.
And they were like, wow.
Who's the freak now?
Exactly. Gulp, look at all these insects I got.
Yeah.
They think that the bat evolved, like you said, from a tree-dwelling mammal, which we likely did as well, which is why we're related to bats,
yeah.
Most likely. We share some sort of single common ancestor that dwelt in trees.
Mm-hmm.
And probably bats evolved somewhere around 100 million years ago is what they believe. But I think the oldest fossils they found are like 50 million and change.
Yeah.
And these fossils that they found in Wyoming show that the wings are there, but the ears are not developed, which suggests that flying developed among bats before echolocation did, which has been a long-standing debate.
Yeah.
Did echolocation come first? Did flying come first, or did they both evolve at the same time? And it turns out flying was first.
Nice. Well, right after this break, we will talk about that echolocation. How about that?
Let's.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, Josh, we talked about the wing structure makes them able to hunt really well, but it's really a 1-2 punch along with their echolocation or echolocative abilities.
I think that's a word.
Is that a word?
Yeah.
All right.
So you can maneuver all day long, but if you can't find your prey, you're
just doing a weird dance.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're just showing off. And the way that bats find their prey, there's a common myth, Chuck, that bats, blind as a bat,
yeah,
that bats can't see. Absolutely untrue.
Yep.
Most bats have, like, perfectly good vision.
Yeah, like exceptional vision even.
Yeah. There was a study, German study, I believe, that found that bats have rods and cones, which means they can see color in the daylight,
yeah,
as well as, like, black and white stuff.
Sure.
Right?
Old movies.
Sure.
Yeah.
Before Ted Turner got his hands on them.
Oh, boy.
And
that never went anywhere.
It really didn't. But now it's like, it's done. Now Wizard of Oz is like gaudy. As gaudy as like the Terracotta Army originally was.
Well, no, Wizard of Oz always was both. Because when they get to Oz, it's color.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Gone with the Wind.
I think he did colorize
it. He did colorize it.
Okay.
Woof. Anyway, can you tell it's been a little while since we've done this?
No, I think it's great.
I can. It's also really hot in here. And it's getting hotter by the second. The more I stall, the hotter it gets. Allow me to continue.
Okay.
So bats echolocate as well as see. And again, I'm not quite sure. I couldn't find this, Chuck, but I think microbats might be the only type to echolocate.
Oh, really?
I don't think all bats do.
Oh.
The reason why is because if you're a hippie pollen-eating herbivore bat,
sure,
you don't need to echolocate your food. You can just fly around until you run into a flower.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and smash it and then just like lean over and suck it
dry. There's some nectar.
Yeah.
Okay. If you are seeking flying insects as your prey, then yeah, you better be able to echolocate. And we can actually echolocate. There's a man who is sightless. Uh-huh. Who can echolocate, and he's a human being.
He is?
Yeah, I can't remember what, maybe a Men's Health article on him. Like, this dude just taught himself to echolocate.
Did they call him Batman?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't remember that much.
Well, if you've ever been to a canyon, let's say a Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Let's say the Grand Canyon.
Sure.
And you boom your voice out there, please don't say hello or is anyone out there. Those are, you know, come up with something better than that.
Better than Pink Floyd lyrics?
No. If it's in that context, then it passes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, what would you recommend for an echo?
Oh, man.
What's your go-to echo words?
Definitely not echo.
I think echo is great. It's hilarious.
Definitely not hello. You know, I would say now batting for the New York Yankees.
Manny Moto.
Manny Moto. That's what I would do.
You could also do ka-ka-ka-cha.
What's
do the
that?
Chicken dance.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. So whatever you choose to go with at your next visit to the canyons, you will hear that echo come back to you. And it's basically the same way that bats use, except instead of echoing off of a canyon wall, it's echoing off of a mosquito.
Sure. Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. When you make sound waves and it travels and it hits that canyon wall, it comes back to you, right?
Yeah.
And bats do the same thing, but like you said, they're bouncing off of a mosquito or some other flighted bug.
Sure.
That it eats. And just from standard echolocation, the bat can identify, oh, there's a mosquito there. Like all this other stuff, all the other sound that I just put out there came back at a much slower rate than this little spot did. And that spot is probably a mosquito, but it gets way more detailed than that.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, bat's echolocation, is picked up, and they're still not entirely certain, like, what kind of receptors the bat has. I mean, it's apparently all oral.
Yeah.
But in the bat's brain, it creates what would be about equivalent to our visual field. Like, we see light bouncing off of stuff, and
yeah.
I can tell roughly how far away you are and where you are and what position you're facing or what direction you're going, all through light waves.
Yeah, in an instant. Like, we don't have to think about that. Like,
right.
We see it, and it's there.
The bat's not calculating all of this.
No.
It's just getting this information. Its brain is automatically putting it together in what amounts, again, to, like, a visio-spatial field.
Wow.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And so it knows there's a mosquito. It's about this big. It's about yay big. It's traveling at this rate in this direction, and it's, like, right below me. And it goes and gets the mosquito.
Yeah.
All from, rather than picking up light waves, creating a sound wave and listening for its echo.
Yeah.
That's echolocation.
It's amazing. So,
and also, I should say, Chuck, it's really good that this is ultrasonic. Because some of them go up to like 120 decibels, which is the equivalent of having a smoke detector like a couple inches from your ear.
That is not fun.
No, it'd shatter your life.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the different parts. They will determine the distance of the mosquito by how long it takes that noise to return. You and I could do that with simple math at a canyon. We could actually calculate mm-hmm. how far away that other wall is. With maths.
You and the canyons.
You know? Location. They can determine where it is and how big it is and what direction it's moving by literally, like, if the mosquito sound bounces back and hits the right ear before the left ear,
mm-hmm.
they know it's going to be the right.
Right.
That's pretty easy. And then they have all these little complex folds within the ear. It's not just like a big, dumb human ear like
right.
we have.
Yeah.
Lots of little folds that will help indicate its vertical position as well. So if they know it's coming from above, it'll sound different in the ear than if it's below.
Right. And again, to the bat, all this is happening automatically. Its brain is putting all this information together, and the bat knows there's a mosquito right below it.
That's right. The size is determined by the intensity of the echo. Something larger will have a, you know, more intense echo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big fat mosquito that just feasted on Josh. So
right.
it's got lots of delicious...
Tons of blood.
Delicious blood.
And they also use the Doppler effect, Chuck, to determine whether something is going away from it or toward it.
That's right.
Remember the Doppler effect? I've mentioned it before and got it totally wrong.
Yeah.
Let me try again.
It's tough.
You ready?
Yeah.
So the wavelength of something is set. It's determined, right?
Yes.
But if something is coming near you, that wavelength has to be compressed in a shorter space.
Yes.
So therefore the frequency, the pitch increases. If something's traveling away from you, it has a lot more space between it and you to fill up that same wavelength.
Yes.
The same wavelength.
Uh-huh.
So the frequency, the pitch goes lower. That's the Doppler effect.
Right.
I think it's the Doppler effect.
Why do I have a feeling you're going to get emailed to people like, oh, Josh, so close.
I really practiced.
But this one more thing. So that is how they determine distance, location, size.
Direction.
And direction.
Right.
Amazing.
And also the actual sound that they're making when they echolocate. A lot of bats fly around with their mouths open.
Yeah.
And they look like they're just kind of slack-jawed yokels.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it turns out they're making their echolocation squeaks the whole time. Again, it's just ultrasonic, which is above the human threshold of hearing, right?
Yep.
So it's squeaking the whole time. It's not just sitting there with its mouth agape. And some bats also, especially the microbats that have the crazy nostrils that make you gag.
Yes.
Those actually will echolocate and generate the sound through their nose.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why they look that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're like little speakers.
Right. So, Chuck, I think we nailed echolocation, don't you?
Oh, yes.
And the Doppler effect, maybe?
Put that one to bed.
And we will talk more about bats, including their little families that they stay in right after this.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women. And this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Chuck.
Yes.
So you talked a little bit about bats and how they love to huddle together.
Yeah.
And it depends on the kind of bat.
Yeah.
The bloodthirsty bats, vampire bats.
Yeah.
They actually tend to roost in small little colonies or solitarily, I believe, sometimes in like really hard to reach places.
Like the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like your fireplace.
Yeah.
I had to battle a bat once in a fireplace.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Smoke it out?
I didn't smoke it out. I put on a leather coat over another coat, gloves,
dude, I always love how you suit up before you do any, like, battle with nature.
A laundry basket and a broom.
Yeah.
And I lost. But they'll be by themselves, usually. That's a good giveaway that you have encountered a blood-sucking bat. The hippie herbivore bats, those tend to congregate in enormous colonies.
Yeah.
Some often composed of millions of bats.
Millions.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned that they do all this feeding and activity at dawn, dusk, and overnight.
Yeah.
Because they will, get eaten by hawks and falcons and things during the day. And other predators too. So they like to stay away during the day and hide out, like you said.
Eat
caves, dark places.
Sure.
Under bridges. We'll talk about Austin in a bit.
Right. Hawks don't typically go into caves. They hang out in trees. So bats go off and spend their days sleeping in caves.
Upside down.
Upside down. And you were saying earlier that you were excited about talking about that, and I understand why.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, the reason they hang upside down is not to look creepy. It's because that's the way that they launch themselves to fly.
Right. And when they're sleeping upside down, they're able to sleep. You would think that, well, yeah, if you're like hanging on to something upside down,
you get tired.
Yeah, you've got to really tense your muscles. Not with the bats. You would. If you were doing that.
This is the fact of the show for me.
I think you should take it.
Well, you're right. If I was hanging upside down, I would not last very long because.
I wouldn't last a second.
A, I would be clenched. Well, we couldn't even hang upside down because we'd be using our hands.
And all the blood would rush to your head too and you'd just pass out. It'd be really uncomfortable.
That's right. But what would happen if we were to try to do that or like to try to do a pull up, let's say, is we would, you know, clench our fist around something which contracts muscles, which, are attached to your fingers by tendons. It's all one big series of connections.
Right.
To hang on to something, to clasp something, or to grab that coffee cup.
Exactly. And you're exerting energy by contracting your muscle, right?
That's right.
With a bat, that's not the case at all.
No, their tendons are only connected to the upper body. No muscle involved whatsoever.
Right. So when they're hanging upside down, their upper body is pulling down on their tendons, which means their claws close onto whatever they're hanging from.
Yeah, it's like it's gravity coupled with a reaction, like a physical reaction from pulling that bat will make those claws close.
Exactly. So it requires no energy whatsoever, right?
Or talons, I guess we should say, right?
Yeah. But it requires no energy.
None whatsoever.
And bats will actually, like, they'll die in that position sometimes.
Yeah, so what they do is they'll fly up to this thing, they will initially clasp it with their claws, and then relax. And when they relax, they hang, which makes them clamp down really hard, and like you said, if they die hanging there, they will stay hanging there.
And they can go to sleep. That's where they sleep. So, one of the reasons why it's so important that a bat doesn't have to expend any energy while it's upside down is because they're mammals, which means that they are warm-blooded, which means that they regulate their own temperature internally, right?
Yeah.
Which requires a lot of energy. That puts bats at a particular disadvantage because they fly, and that requires a ton of energy. Mammals are not designed to fly, to generate the energy needed to fly. Bats can do it. To do it, they have to enter what's called a state of torpor every day.
Yeah.
And basically, while they're hanging upside down, they get super, super sleepy, and they get so sleepy that their metabolism starts to slow, and their internal temperature falls and becomes about in equilibrium with the external temperature. So they go from warm-blooded to essentially cold-blooded during a single day.
Yeah, like David Blaine might.
Yes.
If he was preparing for, like, some weird stunt.
Yeah.
They're controlling their own internal temperature and their own metabolic rate.
Right. So while they're doing this, when their metabolism slows, they're using up less energy, which means that they're conserving it for when they fly later on when they go hunt.
That's right.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, they can actually even hibernate some bats.
Yes.
If they're in a region where it calls for it. Or they may just do like birds and migrate to warmer climes.
There's a lot of different bats and a lot of different things that bats do.
Is that going to be our little tag?
Maybe.
This episode? All right, well, let's talk a little bat. Let's call this fact and fiction, since that's what this section is called in the article.
Okay.
Pretty original. Like we said, their leathery wings and their weird faces and their resemblance to ghouls and demons make them vilified.
Yeah.
But bats are our friends because they eat tons and tons of insects.
Literally tons.
Yeah. What was the stat on that?
There is
1,200 mosquitoes in an hour. One bat.
That's a little brown bat.
Yeah.
In North America, it's the most common North American bat species. 1,200 mosquitoes in an hour. Which
that's
you say, who cares? There's trillions and trillions of mosquitoes.
A lot
doesn't
of bats
matter.
Too.
Well, there are a lot of bats. That's right. There's a bat cave in Bracken Cave or Bracken Cave, Texas, that has 20 million bats. It's a colony.
Wow.
And every night they eat 200 tons of insects.
200 tons.
And a lot of those insects are crop-ruining insects, so farmers frequently take their hats off and wave to the bats, hello, hello.
Yeah, they do.
In something of a salute when the bats fly by.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a farmer do that to a bat?
Yeah. He's pumping Roundup in one hand and waving at the bats in the other.
It's neat. It'll bring a little tear to your eye.
They are plant pollinators, like we said. They will go in and gather nectar, and when they do this, they get pollen on their bodies. When they fly away, they spread that pollen.
Right.
So specifically, they're pollinators of bananas, figs, mangoes, cashews, and agave. So if you are hammered on tequila right now,
thank a bat.
Thank a bat.
And you mentioned that colony in Texas, in Austin, right?
Yeah, under the Congress Avenue Bridge. Very famous spot in fact, it's a big tourist attraction now that they've embraced.
So they're bringing tourist dollars in too. They pollinate, they eat pest bugs, and they bring in the tourists.
Yeah. I think some of them are Uber drivers as well.
They're just trying to eke out a living.
Yep, exactly. What else? Let's talk about the guano. You know what that is?
It's poop.
It's bat poop.
Mm-hmm.
And guano is very rich in nitrogen and is a great fertilizer. And not only that, but at one point, the U.S. Army and even further back, the Southern Army, mm-hmm. the Confederate Army, mm-hmm. I believe they're called, they collected bat guano to use as gunpowder and explosives.
They extracted the saltpeter from it.
Crazy.
And
I had no idea.
Yeah.
It actually extended the Civil War because once all their fortifications were destroyed, they literally went and collected guano from bat caves to keep making bombs.
Right.
I don't know about bombs, but gunpowder.
And again, it is also like a top-notch fertilizer that's still in use today. Like you can buy bat guano at the average nursery, probably. It wasn't bat guano, but bird guano, too, has been used, and wars have been fought over it. It's such an effective
Crazy.
Fertilizer and power energy source it's pretty interesting stuff. Go read 1491 or 1493, I can't remember, talks about this in detail.
On the scarier side, though, you did mention vampire bats, and they do feed on blood. But this article is keen to point out that they are not bloodthirsty man hunters. They will.
No, they're man stalkers.
They'll eat a cow. And when I say eat a cow, they won't eat a cow.
No, they usually.
The cow doesn't even, you know, it doesn't hurt the cow that much, right?
No, unless the cow contracts an infection or something from it.
Yeah.
The vampire bats usually need about 1 to 2 tablespoons of blood a night, which you can easily get from a cow without any harm to the cow as far as blood loss goes, right?
Sure.
And the cow typically doesn't even know what's going on because the vampire bats have very sharp teeth that don't really make much of a sensation going in.
Yeah.
And the saliva has an anticoagulant in it, so the blood just kind of trickles out and keeps coming.
Yeah.
And then the vampire bat flies away. What's interesting about them, though, is they don't fly onto you. They fly near you, and then they stalk you on all fours, which makes it super creepy.
Yeah. Even though I love bats, a crawling bat with those wings is a little creepy.
Coming to suck your blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no, it's not sucking blood, remember. It's an anticoagulant, so it just opens
it's
up
lapping,
a vein.
Lapping up blood.
It laps up blood.
Apparently, they also have a cool little organ in their nose. It's like a heat-sensing organ, so they can find like where the blood is closest to the skin.
Oh, really?
And then go...
Wow.
And then go...
let's talk about reproduction for a second. They reproduce typically only once a year.
Oh, bat reproduction.
Yeah. Oh, you thought it meant just like us.
I thought you were about to sing Salt and Pepper.
They reproduce typically only once a year, and that makes them it's tough. They're some of the least producing mammals in the world.
Yeah, they produce one baby a year.
Yeah, on average. Some can reproduce more.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen that much. They're called pups, which is very cute.
Uh-huh.
A pup weighs 25% of the mother's body weight, which is remarkable.
Because they often nurse while the mother's flying around.
Yeah, so that'd be like a 120-pound woman having a 30-pound baby.
Just attached to her while she's flying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They live, like we said, in large colonies, and so it's not hard to find a mate. But once the females get pregnant, they tend to form a maternity colony within the colony. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, and apparently the bats are very altruistic. Like, they've recorded acts of bats going and bringing food back for bats who are sick in the colony.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
That's pretty
neat. You don't find that very often in nature.
No, not even with man.
Right.
In many cases.
Yeah.
So they'll form that little maternity colony, which is super sweet, because the men don't really stick around and help raise the young. Evidently, they just do their thing and they're gone. And apparently the colonies are, men tend to hang out with men and women tend to hang out with women anyway.
It's like an eighth grade dance in there.
Absolutely. So what happens is the women care for their offspring for a while, but they don't have a whole lot of time to do it. About 6 weeks to 4 months, and then the bat is fully independent and can fly on its own, which is great. And, this is the second fact of the podcast to me.
Okay.
The female bat is so smart. They can delay their fertilization based on like the best time to have a baby bat.
Really?
Yeah. So they can have the sex in the fall and hold that sperm, and release the sperm to meet the eggs like 6 months later in the spring.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is very neat.
They've learned to actually control their own cycle.
They have some serious willpower.
Well. They want to survive, you know?
Yeah.
They are ultimate survivors.
You know, bats have a real problem facing them right now, Chuck, with white nose fungus.
I know. And this is sort of, it's not only a threat, but it's a bit of a mystery, isn't it? Why it's so widespread all of a sudden?
Well, it's just spreading like wildfire, in part because bat colonies are so huddled and close together.
Sure.
From what I understand, it's just the ones that hibernate that are having the problem, because this white nose fungus, it's a fungus that grows on their nose. And apparently the itch makes the bats that are hibernating wake up. And when they wake up, they're in big trouble because an animal that hibernates has just enough energy stored to make it through the hibernation period. If they wake up and blow a bunch of energy, like bringing their metabolism and body heat back up to normal levels, and then try to go back into hibernation, they'll starve to death before the winter's over.
Wow.
So this white fungus grows on their noses and other parts, but typically on the nose, and wakes them up, and then they spend all their energy and end up dying. Or they die from exposure to these winter temperatures or that kind of thing.
That's awful.
Yeah, and apparently it is really deadly. Like some hibernaculas, which is like a hibernating colony, have like 90 to 100% mortality rate when white nose fungus gets a hold of them.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and it's a real problem. They don't know how to stop it.
Well, another real problem is in places, some parts of South America, when there is a rabies fear going around, an outbreak in the town, they will bomb a cave full of bats.
Blow it up.
They will blow it up, and let's say there's 100,000 bats in there, and 0.5% of those have rabies. So that's 500 rabid bats. They're killing off 100,000, and then they're like, what's up with all these mosquitoes? Why do I have malaria?
Well, either that or the bats they go after are the ones they can easily find in caves, which are the ones that pollinate. They're not even vampire bats, so they're not getting rabies from them anyway. So they're killing a bunch of bats that aren't spreading rabies at all.
Well, I mean, any
and
bat
leaving
can
the ones that
rabies.
Actually are. Right, but most pollinating bats don't come into contact with humans.
Exactly.
The vampire bats are the ones you would have to really worry about catching rabies from.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not even getting the ones that are spreading the rabies.
Just misinformation.
There's one more threat from humans that started to come to shape and fruition, but didn't fully back in World War II. Did you hear about bat bombs?
Nope.
So there was a dude in the U.S. who had this great idea, and it was attaching incendiary bombs to bats and then releasing the bats on Japan.
That's a pretty good idea.
So this guy apparently had the ear of, and I read this in an Atlantic article.
Yeah.
This guy had the ear of Eleanor Roosevelt, and it ended up becoming like an army research project that went far enough along that there were mishaps, like an airplane hangar blew up because some bats got released prematurely. A general's car blew up for the same reason. And it almost happened, and then they just dropped it.
What did Eleanor Roosevelt have to do with it?
Well, she was the first lady at the time.
Well, I know, but since when did first ladies not like work with education and nutrition? Like, when would like, how about bomb bats?
Eleanor Roosevelt definitely was seated at the right hand of the seat of power. She was a sharp lady.
Crazy.
Yeah. Bat bombs.
Well, she wasn't that sharp. She thought that was a good idea.
I have the impression that she was doing it as a favor, like getting this guy entree to the army.
The war room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Eleanor Roosevelt. You got anything else?
Nope.
If you want to know more about bats, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And again, go look up bat eating a banana. It's so adorable.
Yeah. Or the little baby bat burritos. They have like nurseries with a bunch of them, like nursing on bottles and wrapped up in little swaddles.
So cute.
Very cute.
And since I said adorable, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this one of the 10 people that saw us perform in Washington Square Park.
Oh, yeah. The 10.
Yep. So they get in any one of you. If you email us, I'll read it on the air.
All of them are missing time.
Long-time listener and fan here, guys. I introduced my boyfriend to the podcast as well. He saved us many hours of boredom on road trips. I have to say, the recent episode about how Nazis attempted to invade Long Island in Florida was one of my favorites ever. We got a lot of great response from that one, by the way. I lived in New York City for 8 years now and spent lovely summer days on Amagansett Beach. Jeez. Yeah. So the thought of a U-boat rolling up there and depositing German spies with plans to attack New York is particularly chilling. My boyfriend and I attended your show in Washington Square Park and your big live show in New York City this summer. And the latter is why I'm writing. I felt you should know as a result of the topic you chose for the show. You cost me several nights of kitchen cleanup duty. Before the show, we were grabbing drinks next door and decided to make things interesting with a little bet as to what the topic would be. We came up with six possible categories we thought it could fall into: biology, geography, history, physics, current events, and political, social.
It could have fallen into three of those.
Yeah, and we're not going to reveal it here, by the way, people,
no.
Because we're touring that same show.
We got at least one more go-round with
in this fall. And so if you have seen the show, we're going to say this again and again. Don't come again unless you just want to.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, like follow the Grateful Dead or fish around, see the same show.
No, they play a different show every night. That's why they follow them around.
Well, not completely different every night.
Pretty much different.
That's impossible.
No, I mean, like, they play a different show every night.
Well, they might alter songs, but there's no, they don't have 3,000 songs.
They have a lot of songs.
These people see them hundreds of nights in a row.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we have some stuff heads that want to follow us around.
Yeah, maybe so. They're all, like, driving around in vans. And...
yeah, we mix our show up a little bit.
Sure.
All right.
I think that's a good public announcement, though, like...
yes.
What you just did.
Thank you. So we scribbled these down on a napkin, did the draft-style selection, went back and forth picking categories, had a feeling I was confident with my chances. For the moment you announced the topic, blank, I knew I'd lost. He had political, social, and current events. So that's a bit of a hint.
Yes.
It's not biology. Anyway, guys, we really enjoy the live shows and hope you come back to New York soon. And that is from Natalie Breitbach and her boyfriend, Hagen.
Really?
Yeah.
Hagen?
H-A-G-A-N. Hagen?
Yeah, we'll go with Hagen.
All right. I would say it should be Hagen, and if they got married, he should take her last name and be Hagen Breitbach.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a great name. It sounds like there's umlauts all over the place.
All over.
Well, if you want to get in touch with us to let us know how great you thought our show is or how excited you are about seeing our show, we would like to hear from you. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.